Welcome to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. This special episode is produced in collaboration with Independent Art Fair New York City. It will be part of the fair's OVR for its next edition from September 9 to 12, 2021. I'm Daniela, and this podcast is about my personal and also about a lot of other people's enthusiasm for art. Art can touch on all parts of life, and therefore we talk about all parts of life. I hope to get you on board and to tell you interesting stories you enjoy listening to. We're recording via the internet, so please excuse any glitches and sound quality. Episode 41, recorded August 3, 2021. My guest today is Maisha Mohammadi, artist and painter, who will be showing her work at Parash Hainan Gallery in a dialogue with works by John Wesley at the upcoming Independent Art Fair. Hello, Maisha. Very nice to have you.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Maisha, I looked at your work and I also listened to some of your interviews, and that opened up really a variety of questions for me. But before we talk about your work and your upcoming projects, as always, I would first like to dive into your childhood, your background, and your first encounter with art.
I am originally from Los Angeles, and I was mainly raised in a small town called San Luis Obispo, which is on the central coast of California. And I'm back in LA now. I've been here for the past 6 years. Both of my parents are from Iran. Mm-hmm. They met here in California, in Los Angeles. I'm an only child. And my first encounter with art, my mom made paintings, watercolors. But her main career was that she was an interior designer. Mm. She made watercolors, and we had a small museum in my hometown, the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art, and they would accept artworks from the community members. So there was this sort of flat file system. Mm-hmm. And I remember my mom exhibited a couple of her watercolors there. So I would say that would be my first formal encounter with a museum.
And was that also inspirational, that you thought like, oh, I like that? Or was there probably looking at other artworks involved as well? Also, you started your education with science.
Right. I think seeing my mother's paintings in that museum had a profound effect on me, because mm-hmm. it just seemed like such a legitimate thing, you know? It wasn't just her painting in the kitchen or framing them and putting them in our home. It felt very legitimized and important to me. And I really remember that having a big impact. So I always loved art and also science. And so I was always taking art classes and science classes. But in the end, by the time I was in my senior year of high school, I had basically decided to pursue a career in science.
One question I have, just like going back to your mom, was that also that you perceived that act of exhibiting her work in the museum as an act of empowerment for her?
Yes. I mean, I wouldn't have known to put those words to it at that time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that act of exhibiting her work existed outside everything else that defined her role in life. So she was a mother, a wife. She had her own small business, and it would help my dad with his businesses. But this was just hers, and it had nothing to do really with the rest of our life. It was only hers.
Mm, and that was like a role model for you, so you could have also something for yourself.
I think so. And I feel I am actually very obsessed with that concept. So I'm always, I think, and my husband is also an only child, so thank God, because he understands my personality. But I need to have a large percentage of my life be just for myself.
Mm-hmm. I can absolutely understand that. But first, you decided to be a scientist, or to study to be a scientist. And first, I would like to know a little bit more about that. But also, I thought about this. And is there something that science and art have in common?
I think there's a lot that they have in common. And it really depends on what angle you're looking at. So for me in particular, it would be kind of the day-to-day action. So when I was in the laboratory, using all the laboratory equipment, the beakers, mm-hmm. the pipetters, all those little capsules and measuring substances, all of that is basically identical to what I do in my studio. So it's less about the content of what I was studying, though I studied neuroscience. So there's a lot of literature about the brain and art and creativity. There could be so many connections made, but for me, the main thing was the behavior. So the daily behavior. So when I got my own studio, it was so easy for me to set that up and just get going because I had learned how to operate in a 9-to-5 way, just doing my own projects all day.
Mm-hmm. And so science was also a physical act for you, like also painting is now a physical act for you?
Yes. And I think honestly, that's what interested me most about it. I love equipment that is custom to whatever you're supposed to be doing. So the experiments I was doing for a while before I finally left my laboratory job required extremely customized equipment. Sometimes we even had to build that equipment ourselves. And that really excited me.
I was wondering, because you once said you secretly probably always wanted to be an artist, but you lacked the confidence. Why do you think it takes more confidence to be an artist than a scientist? For me, it would be the other way around, I think.
Well, I think it probably comes down to the risk involved in terms of how successful I could be, because it seems, as you know, maybe you don't even have to be very smart, but if you work hard and go to your job and contribute to, you know, the laboratory's work, you can be a certain level of successful. You can make, you know, a normal salary, you can have a life. And I never knew anyone who was a professional artist when I was growing up. So I didn't know what that looked like. All I had was, you know, Hollywood movies, and all of those people seem to come from exceptional circumstances or be able to live in exceptional circumstances, maybe like without money, for example. And that just really didn't seem possible for me to do.
But did you then count in the notion of wanting or having to be successful in this process of becoming a painter?
I think I, well, let me think. There was a point where I knew if I didn't do it, I would regret it. So it really came down to that.
Okay. And with all the consequences.
Yep. I was ready. I didn't really care what happened, but simultaneously, I promised it would work. I promised myself it would work.
Okay. The interesting thing is the connection between science and art, but also historically, there has already been so much done and said in painting. And you just said in a recent interview that you don't feel bound by the rectangle of the canvas and still you work within its limits. So my question would be why you still choose painting as your expression. Why not something that leaves the rectangle? And what is the special thing you would like to contribute to this field of painting?
There was, I think early on when I wanted to be an artist, I experimented a lot. And I'm still very drawn to other forms of expression. I love film. Every once in a while, I make sculptures, you know, privately. But there was a point when I realized if I didn't choose one thing and put all my energy into it, I would never become an expert at it. And that's my main goal. I want to be exceptional at something and be an expert at it, really. So that's why it's almost, I wouldn't say it's arbitrary. I do love to paint, but in a way it's arbitrary because it was a choice at that moment in time. And now I've gained so many hours that I have my own special engagement with it that I could never have with another medium at this point.
Yeah, I mean, time matters. And I think in painting, especially, practice matters a lot. And I know, you know, it's like I'm firing questions at you right now, but all of those really came up while looking at your paintings and this whole process, how you're painting. And when you said painting was for you a conscious decision to make that, and you decided consciously then to work abstractly. And I was wondering if abstract art might be a better representation of signs than figuration. Was that a point you were thinking of?
No, I've always resisted making any connection in regards to the content or subject matter of what I previously studied. And for me, making my artwork, at least solely in the beginning, was to express myself. I didn't think very much about the viewer. I've always had this pathological need to express myself.
Did you express yourself in signs too then?
No, that's why I think it was so terrible for me, because I felt, you know, like I was an actor. I mean, I liked the costume of wearing the scientific lab coat, but beyond that, it felt like I was not really being myself at all.
Do you think you would have found this painting process for like being yourself without the example of your mom?
Yes. Yes. I am now benefiting from the experience of things feeling like they are working out for me. So of course, in looking back, I can make all the connections that led me here. And it feels easier to say that I would have gotten here no matter what, because I have the wind in my sails at this point. But I think that to do something where I feel, because I make it such a dire exploration for myself internally, it's so intense for me. I can't imagine that I would never would have been drawn to this, regardless of what my external or life circumstances were.
Could you explain about this intensity? What is it? Then you're in the studio and then you start working, and this comes from your inside through your physical movements on the canvas?
Yes. I have learned, I've trained myself, when I step in there, it's a different world. That's a world where I can think anything. I can be harsh with myself. I can be completely honest with myself. I don't hold back. And that's always been the thing I've wanted to cultivate more than any other inspiration. I wanted to be able to draw upon something very core and intense within my body and mind.
And are you then a different person when you're painting than in your everyday life? Although I figure painting is your everyday life, but you also have a family.
Right. It's interesting. I think right now in this last year, I've painted more than the percentage of time I'm painting is much higher than it's ever been. And it's kind of weird, especially because I have three people depending on me in different ways, my husband and two children. So it's not like I can go to the studio, then come home and just be a diluted version of my studio self. I have to completely shift. So there's this thing in my household that we call the transition bath. So when I come home, everyone knows not to talk to me. I mean, I say hello and make sure, you know, everyone's fed or whatever, but then, you know, mom goes and takes her transition bath. So I go in there, I just completely submerge myself. And that's really served to be this pretty quick method of switching my selves, I guess. But I don't like this idea that it's two different selves. It's not exactly that.
It's like two sides of the same coin.
I don't know. It's not opposing. That's the problem. It's all these metaphors. It's like instead of or opposing. It's, I don't know. I guess it's more like a lava lamp, you know, where there's the colored portion and the oily.
It's fluid.
It's fluid, but they're existing together. But when I'm in the studio, it's the colored blobs.
And can you explore a little bit more? What is the special thing that is interesting you, which is driving you when you're painting? Because I figured that there are outside things that interest you, like cookbooks books, like stories, like feelings, like different things. But when you bring them onto the canvas, it's still like the line and the color and the mark. Mm-hmm. How is this transformational process working? I had the feeling that it's like a kind of digesting process through which you metabolize these outside things and then you put them out on the canvas.
I think I would agree with that. There's a lot of conscious thought and implementation of parameters. So maybe pulling colors from certain sources, like you mentioned, the cookbooks, or mm-hmm. identifying a feeling or particularly rich experience that I'm pulling from. But there is a point where after I've mixed the colors and maybe have a vague sense of the composition that I don't think it's just execution. Mm-hmm. And that's the part where I'm so grateful I focused only on this for the past 10 years, because now I have the luxury of not thinking. I mean, my hand does what it's supposed to do. And then there are points where I pop out of that and need to bring some conscious decision making. But even that process is intuitive. Like, I'll sense when I need to stand back and bring some analytical thought to it.
Does that mean in the end you wouldn't even need an outer purpose or anything for painting? You could just go on and on and on.
I think I'm on the verge of being that way. Mm. So I haven't really thought about it. I've been wondering that, actually, like, maybe I don't need to do all this preparatory work. Maybe I can just go in and paint.
Mm-hmm. Would that be something you would prefer?
I don't know. I literally have only just started thinking about this. It's not really preference. I'll do whatever makes the painting the best it could possibly be. So mm-hmm. I think it would have to be, if doing that creates better paintings, then absolutely, that's the way to go.
And what is a better painting in your eyes?
A better painting would be a painting that surprises me a little bit more than the last painting I did. Mm. And usually when that happens, other people respond that way to it also. So that's fortunate. So it's either that different variables, like the color, the line, the composition, the scale, come together and bring some new, difficult to define element that really excites me. Or it could be just those variables that I push. For example, I've never really made a large diptych, mm-hmm. and I'd like to do that. So sometimes I just give myself really kind of rudimentary assignments that way. So that would be a quote unquote better painting for me, because I, you know, developed a challenge for myself and took it on.
And how important is the size in your paintings? Because a lot of them are quite large.
The size is really important. I've always felt very drawn to this feeling of, I wanted to feel small next to the surface. Mm. And I always thought about being a kid. And it's funny, I just saw my 5-year-old do this too. You know, it's not like a general kid thing to do this. My 5-year-old did it. He's trying to help himself fall asleep at night. He's lying down on his back in his bed and his feet are up on the wall, just kind of like tracing lines on the wall with his toes. And I used to do that. And I love that feeling of that topsy-turvy feeling of seeing this giant wall above your head. Mm. So I've always sought to replicate that.
And would you like the audience, if at all, would you like them to feel the same way? To feel small?
I don't know. I think I would like them to feel this expanse and spaciousness in the sense that it would help convey a more encompassing mood, I suppose. But I don't really have a preference for how my viewer feels. I just want them to believe me.
Hmm. Okay. You mentioned like meaningful and believable. You mentioned that several times, that, for example, that making meaningful and believable marks is very important for you. What makes a mark, or what makes your painting meaningful and believable? What is that for you?
It seems like there is a nice causal connection between me having an authentically emotional impulse and executing that in some expression in paint. I feel like 75% of the time that ends up being true, that the emotion can successfully carry out to a really lovely mark that fits in very well to the painting. And I think that took me a long time to develop. And I think that's one of the most important things in abstraction, because you're not giving the viewer any additional cues in terms of imagery or content, subject matter. So it's critical that they believe you, because that's one of the only things they have to lock into when they're viewing the work.
For me, it made a difference now, seeing a little bit more of your work, but also listening to what you said about it or reading interviews. And then suddenly I could trace the lines much better. I understood the color fields much better, not only intellectually, but also emotionally. See the scale, the structure, the haptic, everything. And I wonder if encountering them body to body, painting body and human body, do you think that is then the process of feeling a believable emotion or a believable physical movement?
I think seeing them in person makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. I feel like they look different. Just if you were to flatten the image and look at it on a screen versus how I see them in my studio, it feels very different to me. However, it is pretty difficult for me to actually see what the painting looks like to another person. Because I've been with it from the beginning, and there are just so many worlds that I've entered and exited throughout the process of making the painting, it's difficult for me to just settle on the final image. But it seems like, from what other people have told me, that it is a very different experience to see them live in person.
And is that a form of communication for you? So is it still important that other people than you see them?
Yes, absolutely. So I had said previously that when I first started painting, it was really only about me and needing to basically get all this stuff inside of me outside of my body. But now it's really different. I use the stuff inside of me to begin the process, to fuel the process in a way that's idiosyncratically connected to me, to my hand. But beyond that, I actually only think about the viewer, because these paintings won't live with me. They are meant to be outside of my studio. So I am thinking about how they will impact the person who encounters them.
I just need to repeat a few things that you said in an interview, because all of that was quite fascinating. And I found you are a quite analytical person when you talk about the process. And then obviously when you do it, something completely else comes out. And you were talking about the aspect of discovery and inventing your own rules and finding out something that nobody else knows about and being interested in the big questions, like what is consciousness? Why are we here? And on the same time, you understand from a scientific point of view how the human brain and the visual system and everything functions. In a way, it's a lot of ambition to find things out. And how does that then, all these things which you can formulate so much, and then you do something which is actually quite beautiful, but it's also cryptic.
Yeah. Well, I love that word, cryptic. I love the idea of secrets and something that's private. I mean, the easiest metaphor or comparison I can think of would be an athlete. You think of a baseball player, like a pitcher or a tennis player. There are so many elements that go into their excellence. So they're training, they have a specific trainer, they eat certain food, they drink these elixirs and tonics and take all these supplements. And then they're training all these hours and all this stuff. But then, you know, when the pitcher's on the mound, he's not thinking, or she's not thinking, she executes. And to me, in my head, I think of that as a trained grace, because there's this moment where all that skill, all the muscle memory does its job without conscious thought. And that's a moment of grace where hopefully something original or transcendent comes.
And there are no words for that.
Maybe just wow.
Yeah, that's always the thing. I think like when we're talking about art and the process of doing a work or whatever you or I say, it will never reveal the true secret of the artwork itself. Mm-hmm. It's not possible.
And it shouldn't. It really shouldn't. Otherwise, we'd be writers.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know if it's a romantic notion. I don't think it's romantic, but it is an inspirational notion that art can have something that inspires us.
I think it's romantic. It's 100% romantic. I love living in that world of fantasy. That's just so electric for me. I love to live in this world in my studio where I can be idealistic and romantic and go for something that feels impossible and big and wonderful.
Mm, I love that. Yeah, actually, we all should have that in our lives, don't you think?
Absolutely.
And do you bring that also home to your kids?
I think I could do better with that. Let me think. Okay, I want to answer that honestly. Let me think. So I don't think I do in regards to the way in which I interact with them. I'm not at the table making paintings with them, doing projects with them. However, I do think that I bring a really high spirit of adventure and honesty to my parenting of them. So I do a lot of things I know other mothers don't in terms of taking them on trips. And I do a lot of things alone with them that are adventurous. And I always want to speak truthfully and honestly with them. And there is something I want to say about that. I want them to know that 75% of what they're experiencing is not set in stone.
Mm-hmm.
That's important to me. And I think that's where I'm bringing all my love of fantasy and flair and rule breaking. That's what I'm bringing to them.
Mm-hmm. And that's quite inventive and quite opening doors opening, because if we know that a lot of our experiences and a lot about what we think about the world is not set in stone, it's just made up by people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just ideas, and we can inject other ideas and fantasies.
I want them to know that.
Mm.
Regardless of what they end up being interested in, I would like them to know that's always an option.
Yeah, that's cool. And do you bring something of your kids into the studio?
I think so. I think I used to more when I was really hunting for my own process and identifying it. I would watch them and be really inspired by how they operated in this kind of unpredictable way. I don't as much anymore. However, I do lean on them emotionally a little bit, hopefully in a way that they're not feeling, because I am alone in there all the time. Mm-hmm. And I like being alone. And I actually think that loneliness and boredom can be useful for my work. But there are times where my level of vulnerability is so high, I do bring them with me to the studio, and they're not interacting with me. You know, they have their own games and toys, and they're not like, you know, making the paintings with me at all. But just having them there gives me such comfort, and I'm able to kind of get back in my lane if I've drifted.
Do you think you have found your process?
Yes.
Well, that's a short answer.
Well, it'll never stay the same, but
if it's yes, it's yes. It's great, actually. Yes. So if you have found your process and you will have a presentation with Parash Heinen Gallery at Independent, will it be all new works? That's the first part of the question. And the second part is that you wrote in your thesis about John Wesley, and you will have a two-artist presentation with him at the Independent. Mm-hmm. Please tell me first what you will be showing at Independent, and also what makes that particular presentation then special for you.
Okay, well, maybe you can hear that I'm smiling. I'm so excited about this. It's all new work. I'm so excited to show these paintings. And I did include John Wesley in my MFA thesis. In grad school, I came up with this idea called the puppy dilemma. Mm-hmm. It has a schematic that I can share with you later. But just imagine that there is an empty room, like your typical gallery space, white walls. And the puppy dilemma encapsulates the major obstacle that any contemporary artist has. You walk into the room. On the left side, there's a large-scale Mesha Mohammadi painting, okay? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nothing else in the room on that side. On the right side, there is a cute puppy, maybe the cutest puppy you've ever seen in your life, okay? So you're walking into the gallery. Can my painting draw your attention more than that cute puppy?
Interesting.
I thought about this at that time 10 years ago. And now that I look back, what I was actually interested in was what makes somebody interested in viewing a static object over a mm-hmm. period of time. Because especially with the way our brains work now, you really get a split second window to engage somebody's attention. Mm-hmm. And that's just really the fact of it. I mean, unless you're some intellectual and you really kind of like spend a weekend reading about something, but most people don't do that. So for my thesis, I thought I want to find out what actually makes a painting demand to be looked at for a long period of time. And I had no idea what the answer was. I mean, there are superficial things like maybe a giant painting, so scale, or a really colorful painting, or maybe really provocative imagery. Of course, those things would demand attention, but I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about what endures over time. So I selected several artworks that I was interested in, and Wesley was one of the artists I was interested in, and he's my favorite artist. And I also selected Thoma Abst. At that time, the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, they had a Thoma Abst painting on display for a long time. So I would go there and spend sessions just staring at it and then recording my observations afterwards.
Wow.
And I really wanted to look at a John Wesley painting, but I couldn't find one in San Francisco. And at that time, one of my professors told me that if I went to New York and I went to his gallery, I could ask to see his work in the back room, which I didn't know you could do that. And then another person at that time told me to go to New York in February because it's cold and miserable and people will meet with me because they have nothing else to do.
So that's a very good advice.
Yeah. So I went in February and I went to the gallery and they were so kind and they set up three John Wesley pieces. I think I sat there for maybe 45 minutes. So, you know, the experiment wasn't totally sound because, you know, I didn't stare at every painting for the same amount of time. And honestly, I don't even remember what my conclusions were. But I think the important thing is, now looking back, I've always been interested in how can a painting unfold temporally over time? And I was really surprised looking at Wesley's work because in reproduction or in an image, it's so flat, it's so graphic. Mm-hmm. But in person, I mean, the line is just so tender and soft. And that's something I just love about his work. So this is really special to me, this presentation.
How did it come about? Was that your suggestion?
What happened was I was working on my solo show at Parish Heinen, and I was working on that so hard, like 15-hour days, just putting everything I had in me into that show. And I think Oh, there were definitely points where I was just sort of like, you know, oversaturated with what I was doing. And I was having a conversation with Chris Heinen and I was like, okay, I don't know. I was just in a cheeky mood, I guess. Didn't want to think about my paintings. So I said, okay, I have a game for you. Guess my favorite artists. And here are the parameters. You get 5 guesses and you have a year, 1 whole year to guess. And so of course he like guesses like 3 artists right away. I was like, dude, slow down. Like you have a whole year. Anyway, so once he found out that John Wesley was my favorite artist, then a few weeks later, he shows up and tells me that he put this booth together for the two of us. So I was like, oh my God, I can't believe that.
It's so interesting because why is John Wesley your favorite artist? What is it in him that touches you so much?
Well, I think to me, his work is very abstract in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So of course, there's the obvious imagery that you lock into right away, but especially in person, it all fades and kind of melts. The lines fade and melt together in a way that obscures the imagery to me. And I think that's very special and really difficult to do. And I love his subject matter. I think he's not him as a person, maybe he is, but the work just, it's depraved, but in this very lovable way that I am so drawn to and so funny. There was this book I saw in my library at art school, and it's this huge book, and it included a lot of his writing. So he would write these short stories and hilarious letters to his dealers and other people. And he's really funny, really, really funny. And I think that comes through in the work. So he's just like a perfect combination of all the things that I'm drawn to.
How can I physically imagine the booth at Independent then with you two together?
Okay.
Are there any plans you made?
I didn't do anything. And I have asked that I not be shown his painting.
Oh, okay.
So Fredericks and Fraser, his gallery in New York, allowed for one piece to be included in the booth. So the booth, I believe it's 2 walls, and one wall is Wesley, one wall is Mohammadi. And I have more than one painting, so my paintings, I think, will be switched out on different days. I'm not exactly sure, but it should be, you know, one-on-one, like Mohammadi versus Wesley. But I don't know what the painting is.
Because you didn't want to react on it?
I think it would be the very best outcome for our existing commonalities to emerge and to not have anything beyond that in terms of harmony, because I think that disharmony that could happen on accident would be the most beautiful thing that could happen. I didn't want to see what would be on the other wall because I would not be able to help harmonizing with him.
I completely understand. So will you travel to the Independent to New York?
I'm going to travel to New York, and I have a filmmaker, Lena Larson, who's making a documentary about me, and she's traveling with me. And so I think she's probably going to capture the first time that I see what painting it is.
Wow.
I mean, I didn't, for both of my children, there's no way I could have waited till the birth to find out the gender. But this is the one thing where I'm like, okay, I'm just going to wait and see it in real life.
Okay. So are you looking forward to it?
Oh my God. I can't wait.
Okay. So any plans beyond that? What will you do after you have this highlight at the Independent? What's going to happen after this? Any plans, or is it just an open field?
Well, I didn't want to overbook myself because I also just like to wander, but I did make a reservation to have high tea at the Plaza Hotel, which is probably a really touristy thing to do, but maybe because of the pandemic, I've watched a lot of British television shows and I just wanted to have the experience of high tea. So I'm doing that, and I want to go to Central Park. And beyond that, I'm just open to whatever happens.
And in your work, Any plans after this, or just do you just let it happen, whatever comes?
Whatever comes, comes.
Thank you, Meisha.
Thank you. Thanks, Daniela.
This was a special Voices on Art episode created in collaboration with Independent Art Fair New York. Listen to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the platform of your choice, on our website van-horn.net, and from September on in the Independent OVR at independenthq.com. Follow Independent Art Fair on Instagram at independent_HQ and the podcast at Voices on Art and at van_horn_Düsseldorf. Thank you for listening to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. Stay tuned and connect.